We're also joined by Rodan Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
Justice Flanders, how would you describe what you expect the impact will be from the pension case, either if it's settled or if it ultimately goes to trial? What is the broader impact nationally?
I want to caution that I can't really comment on the specifics of this case because my partner is involved representing some of the cities and towns. But anytime you have a settlement, a couple of things occur. One is that you at least have an agreement so that people understand that they're signing on to something that isn't the best of all possible worlds for either side, but at least they're accepting the fact that they do have an agreement. And, you know, it sends a signal out nationally when you have a settlement like this of a statewide issue that these things can be worked out, and it doesn't necessarily have to go to the judges to decide everything.
As a student of the law and a former state Supreme Court justice, would you rather see this go to trial?
There's an old saying that a bad settlement is better than a good trial, and the reason that is it's very costly to go to trial, not just from a dollars and cents standpoint, but emotionally. And let's face it, to go forward in this state and elsewhere, we need the cooperation of both labor and management, government, employees, and the taxpayers. And so it's always better if you can come to some resolution. It may not be perfect, but it's better in the long run to have a settlement.
Let's go to Scott.
You were chairman of the Board of Regents for Education for several years, actually 4 years, and I'm wondering, what do you think the role of charter schools ought to be in the public system?
I think charters were initially intended to be held up as experimental models to try and come up with innovative ways to spur better educational outcomes and serve as a beacon for other schools to look to as things they might do differently. So I think that still is the model that we're looking towards. What can charters do? And I look to Central Falls again as an example where the charters have cooperated and shared resources with the public schools there, and that's worked out terrifically. The teachers compare notes, they meet, and to me, that's what charters are all about.
3 years ago in 2012, you questioned whether the city of Providence could fix its financial problems without going into bankruptcy. Do you still hold that view?
I do. I really feel that the problems have not been solved in Providence. I think, unfortunately, the mission accomplished banner shouldn't be raised there because I think there's still a lot of issues. The idea that they could have a 8.25% assumed return on their pension is really contrary to reality. I think we're going to see some real problems as the Alorza administration tries to come to grips with that situation.
You're a former Brown athlete and a minor league baseball player. How do you feel about the move by the new Pawtucket Red Sox owners to move the team to Providence?
Well, you know, as a baseball fan and former player, I'm always excited when baseball makes news. And I know Jim Skeffington and have a lot of regard for him. I think it could be an exciting thing, but is it the best thing, best use for that land? Is that going to produce the kind of jobs that we're hearing about as the mantra of this new administration? I doubt it. So I'd hate to see us get distracted by that, particularly if it's going to cost a lot of time and trouble to get the federal administration to sign on to it and raise parking issues and everything else down there. So I'm a skeptic right now as to whether that's going to be the right solution.
We're talking here with lawyer and former state Supreme Court Justice Robert Flanders. Last year, Robert, you were part of a coalition that advocated for a constitutional convention. The idea was that a CONCON might be able to get things done, reform measures that the legislature is unwilling or reluctant to take up. But voters rejected the constitutional convention. Why do you think that happened? And in the absence of a CONCON, what's the way forward for reform issues moving ahead?
Well, it's hard to say why it happened. I think largely people didn't know what a constitutional convention was. There was skepticism about whether it might be influenced by outsiders and outside money and the like. It's hard to know why there was not more support for that. We only have that opportunity once every 10 years, and so I think it's a healthy thing to take a look at it. But I'm not too worried that we're not going to have opportunities for additional reform. I mean, after all, separation of powers came about not through a constitutional convention, but through conventional pressure put on the legislature over time. It may have taken a scandal or two to make it happen, but it did happen. So I'm always hopeful that that ethics reform, for example, subjecting the legislature to the ethics commission, can come about through persistent political pressure applied in the conventional way.
Do you think that some of that skepticism that Rhode Islanders have about the legislature, I heard a couple of voters tell me, you know, I already got one General Assembly I don't like. Why do I need another one?
Yes, obviously, the idea that you know, this would be a group that would be meeting for a one-time only basis caused some people to think that it could be too easily captured by special interests, and that may have been a legitimate concern. I frankly think that it was worth the risk because other conventions have indeed accomplished a lot, and after all, it goes to the voters ultimately, and the voters, as they did in 86, can pick and choose which they like and which they don't. So I was less worried that it was going to be captured by special interests or that it would compromise civil rights, which was another issue that was raised.
As a former chairman of the Board of Regents for Elementary and Secondary Education, now that state education Commissioner Deborah Gist is moving on, what do you think needs to happen to improve public education in Rhode Island? What are the most important things?
Well, first and foremost, we have to get a terrific leader in that position. I think the first job of the board is to find someone who can carry the banner forward and be a uniter and someone that can bring various factions together and find a way forward to improve education in Rhode Island. I was chairman of the board when we brought in Deborah Gist, and we wanted her to be a change agent. We wanted her to push the envelope. We weren't satisfied with the results, and frankly, I think she fulfilled all of that at a terrible personal toll that it took, unfortunately, on her. But you know, we wanted to raise the bar here in Rhode Island because we were sorry to see us finishing in the bottom rungs on education. And so although there have been improvements on many fronts, we still have a long way to go. So first of all, I think we need to find a great leader.
Should we be using high-stakes testing as a qualification for diplomas from high school?
I think the key is as a qualification, yes. I think high-stakes testing is important. You know, you wouldn't want a surgeon working on you who hadn't taken a test. You wouldn't want a lawyer who hadn't passed the bar working on anything. The truth is we're tested every day in our lives. High-stakes testing is a way of sorting things out. A diploma has to mean something. If a kid can't read his own diploma, what good is the diploma? And so there has to be some way of objectively verifying it. Should it be the only way? Probably not. There ought to be alternatives, perhaps. But I think it's a tool that needs to be used.
You once chaired a commission on the future of healthcare facilities in Rhode Island. We know that community hospitals are under a lot of stress. How do you see things changing in the next 10 years or so?
Healthcare is undergoing tremendous change, and it's moving from a pay-for-services model to a more of a model where you take care of a population of people and get paid for it. And that's going to be an interesting change. It's going on now. You have accountable care organizations forming, and the big hospitals and the community hospitals are all going to need to adjust to this. So I think you're going to see more and more consolidations, affiliations, partnerships, as all of these players morph into more of an organization that takes care of people from cradle to grave and gets paid for doing that rather than how many services you can pump through.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
And lawyer with Hinckley Allen and former state Supreme Court Justice Robert Flanders.
Thank you both.